Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. I want to welcome to the show Fairfield's Chief of Police, Robert Calamaris. And Chief Calamaris, I don't think I've ever had you on my show. If I have, I'm very embarrassed. Have I had you once before? My producer saying yes, I have. Did I have you on when you were first chief? When you first became chief? Did I have you on?
Possibly, yes. Yes, I think so.
Okay, at least our memories are about the same.
Yes, and thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, I appreciate you coming on and so last minute, because I read this yesterday afternoon and got in touch with Brenda Kupchick, and I was so thrilled to have you back on the show. I think this is a huge announcement I wanted to share with our listeners, that Fairfield was awarded almost $3.5 million in grants because of your aging radio equipment. First of all, tell us the current situation going on in Fairfield and why the money was necessary.
Yeah, so our radios date back to the early 90s. And, you know, we've just over the, obviously they're extremely antiquated, you know, nearly 30 years old. And, you know, over the years, we've seen system failures continuously. And it's at the point where we're buying spare parts offline just to keep these the radios that we currently have up and running. I think more importantly is that the radio itself is our lifeline as a police officer, and it's critical that that component, with all the tools that we carry, that's one component that we need to have, and we need to have confidence in the level of its capacity.
And I also, my understanding too, Chief, is that there are dead zones in Fairfield as well. Is that being addressed with this money?
Yes, this radio project will not only improve infrastructure for the project, but also give the end user, which is ultimately the first responder, new radios so that they work not only that, but on the state system. So we're looking forward to that as well.
So we're getting this money, which is, I think, very exciting. I'm wondering, how did Fairfield get chosen? I don't know if you know that answer, but how did Fairfield, you know, get awarded this money? Because I'm wondering how many other towns and cities are probably dealing with a very similar issue.
Yeah, so we put in for a grant for congressional directed spending. And we were very fortunate and very thankful to Senator Blumenthal to be selected for this grant. As he says, you know, it also helped that Brenda called him, the first select woman called him quite a few times to remind him of of the grant that we applied for.
Sounds like Brenda.
Yes, it does. And we're just very grateful and very thankful that we were selected for this grant, because ultimately it protects our first responders while they're out there doing their jobs.
Sure. And it also, you know, protects the citizens. You know, you're able to do your jobs better. And Fairfield has some of the finest, in my opinion. I grew up in Fairfield, so I'm a little biased, but I always felt very safe. I felt that you guys responded to things very quickly. Having a brother with autism, you guys were always very understanding. Guys and gals, I should say, were very understanding and very patient. We've had nothing but good experiences with Fairfield Police and firefighters, and I'm 30-something years old, so it's been wonderful. But I think this also, you know, will help you guys to do your jobs better. Because like you said, you guys so rely on these radio systems, and it allows you to do your job accurately.
Yeah, it improves interoperability between agencies. So we will be able to communicate with surrounding towns and, you know, cities. In addition to that, it is a very important safety component. Like you just mentioned, you know, if our officers are in a dead zone and can't talk to dispatch and they need something at a critical moment, it's just really important that they can get that, get the resources they need to do their jobs the best they can.
So I'm curious, Chief, how soon can you guys get these new radios and update the system so there aren't so many dead zones that you guys have to deal with? Did they say once the money becomes available when these upgrades will happen?
That's a great question. So this money is likely going to support a big portion of the radio project. Unfortunately, it's a little bit more than what the grant has afforded us. So we still have to go through some town boards, which so far have been very supportive in all of our capital requests. And we're hoping that they continue to support us through this process and hopefully get the tools that we need.
That's so exciting. Again, we're chatting this morning with the Fairfield Chief of Police, Robert Calamaris, and Fairfield was just awarded $3.49 million in federal grants to help fund the system's modernization and prevent the gaps in coverage that the fire and police departments are experiencing. And you said these date back to the 90s, you said?
Yeah, our radio system dates back to the early 90s. And, you know, one of the key functions in improving our radio system is that we will be able to communicate not only with other organizations or other police and fire agencies throughout Fairfield County, but in addition to that, you know, our interoperability within our town. And we, you know, during Superstorm Sandy, we had a very long recovery operation where Department of Public Works, the police department, the fire department, it was really all hands on deck. And when those type of events happen, it's very important that the boots on the ground can communicate with each other to make our recovery a lot more efficient. So it's not only the police and fire and public safety, but the hope is that we can get, you know, the Board of Education, the Parks and Rec Department, DPW, all of those entities within the municipality to be able to communicate, to have a better response to whatever critical incident may hit.
Oh, sure.
In our town. Yeah.
Sure. How old can the radios be before they really just start deteriorating, essentially?
So we're at a point where our radios work most of the time. We have a lot of system failures in storms. Our system will go down. It will, you know, we'll switch over to a different channel and have to kind of, you know, I guess if you want to relate it, it's kind of like, you know, we have this new ECC up at Sacred Heart University, which we're also grateful for. And it's like we have this kind of Cadillac ECC, and we're kind of using a can and a string to get communications between officers and back to the dispatch center.
Good
many,
Lord.
Many municipalities, yeah, many municipalities have already updated their systems, and we're a little bit behind the times with respect to the technology that we're using right now. So,
okay.
while it is working, you know, I guess if you figure when was the iPhone 1, you know, that was probably 2009 or 2010. I don't know.
Right.
We're up to like iPhone 13. So
yeah.
The technology's there. We're just not using it.
Yeah, exactly. We're just due for an upgrade, essentially. Look, they're 30 years old, so they need to retire and bring somebody else in. I get it. I totally get it. And this is so exciting. Again, $3.49 million going to Fairfield to upgrade their radio systems and the network. And Chief of Police Calamaris, we so appreciate you coming on and telling us about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Melissa. I love your show.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice of you to say. And I promise I will not forget that we spoke on the radio together. I was very embarrassed to say that in the beginning of the segment. So thank you. I appreciate it. And we'll talk soon.
My pleasure. Have a great weekend.
You too.
What's happening in Hartford and how it affects you? Senate Republican leader Kevin Kelly joins Melissa in the morning now on WICC 600.
Good morning, Senator Kelly. Thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Yourself?
I can't complain. I am a little confused as to what's kind of happening or where is it going to go from here, essentially, when it comes to West Haven. We've been following this story very closely since the fall. We've had Mayor Nancy Rossi on. That was months and months ago. She hasn't come on since. But the latest this morning, the state's Municipal Accountability Review Board approved a plan to take control of West Haven's finances. But ultimately, it will be up to Governor Lamont to decide if this plan moves forward. I just want to clarify something really quick. So West Haven was given over $1 million for their COVID relief funds. There's new reports showing that $800,000 of that money was misused. Is this, in fact, separate from the money that was also taken by the accused Michael DeMassa? Is this separate money or the same money?
And it's an allegation against DeMassa.
Correct. Accused. He's not. Right.
There is overlap. But these are the things, just the fact that we have that question demonstrates how, for lack of a better term, loosey-goosey this has been handled and moving forward. Back in the fall when this first happened, I called for strong and swift action to evaluate what happened so that we can restore the public's confidence in not only West Haven, but in Connecticut. I think if this could happen there, it can happen anywhere. And you don't have to do the whole 169. You could even do something in interim. How about a random audit? Pick a few sample size. At least let's look at it. This same situation was also evaluated by an auditing firm, Cohn Resnick. And Cohn Resnick came back and said, yes, there were some failure to independently review and audit these appropriations. The thing that was amazing is that the MARB, which is the Municipal Accountability Review Board, also made the same recommendations, but nothing happened. Then the auditor comes in and points to the same issues. It's like, hey, there's no checks and balances here on the finances, and nothing happens. It went back to MARB, and now once again, we're going to wait another 30 days for public comment before the governor decides what he's going to do to handle this. And I think it's just, it seems like feet dragging, particularly when you see that even the West Haven City Council had a vote of no confidence in their mayor.
Yeah,
I think even
that was very telling.
Vote of Tier 4 was voted no by the mayor. And I think that's shocking because if the mayor's not accepting responsibility for what is happening, and the no vote, I think, was a vote in defiance of what's going on.
Do you think she should step down? There are a lot of calls for her to resign.
Well, that's where I think this is going. I mean, but the fact of the matter is, whether she goes or not, I think what everybody has been showing is that there's, alleged impropriety here. And when are we going to crack down on that?
Mm.
When are we going to start putting the building blocks in place to start protecting people's money? And then the larger question is, what about other municipalities?
Right.
These were so prevalent and occurring right under the nose of this municipal review board. Why, I think taxpayers have a right to know. It's their sacrifice that they've given to the state in the form of tax dollars. And as elected officials, it's incumbent upon us to make sure that those funds are being used for the purpose that they were requested.
We're talking this morning to State Senator Kevin Kelly about what's going on in West Haven. Another question, Senator Kelly, is there a way to get this money back?
Well,
like when they say misused, has it already been spent on projects or something? Like, that's the other thing that's very confusing about this. We keep hearing misused. But what has it been used for? Is there a way to get that money back, or was that put into a project that's concrete is already in the ground, so to speak?
Well, a couple of the allegations are, casino chips. There was the marching band for a parade. There's commemorative, I'm going to say coins and things of that nature. So, most of this money has been spent.
It's lost.
And
it's
that's
lost money.
What is so disheartening is that it was entrusted, in this case, to the city of West Haven. It's COVID relief funds. So this was to help people through a pandemic, a historic pandemic, where they were, if somebody was unemployed, needed some food because of insecurity, they might need a little extra health care. those were the things, rental assistance. These were the purpose for the money, and it was in a you know, purportedly misappropriated to other means. And by, you know, you look at casino chips and bands, that doesn't seem COVID related. And so when you look at the facts, it's it, you know, the losers are the people that were between a rock and a hard place during COVID. And
sure.
That's not fair.
Sure. Well, and I and
that's not fair at all.
I would think that they're the ones who are going to foot the bill.
Correct.
Mm.
Correct. And it's, you know, that's why I think it's so important to make sure we look through this, because not only is the taxpayer sacrifice being disrespected, but the purpose for the funds was to help vulnerable individuals that were between a rock and a hard place during a very difficult time. And the fact that that money didn't get to its intended purpose is just very, very it's unacceptable. And that's why, both from the taxpayer perspective, but also from the perspective of protecting people who need help, that's why we need the strong and swift action, and it hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm. Senator Kevin Kelly, we unfortunately have run out of time, but I thank you for commenting on this story, because I know it's something that's impacting a lot of our listeners, and we thank you for your calls to see something actually happen with not just West Haven, but just going forward, putting the faith in taxpayers that, you know, when we get federal funds, that they're going to be used properly, and that somebody is overseeing these monies, essentially.
Yeah, and we're going to stay on this. This isn't going away. We're going to continue the calls because I think it's that important.
Mm-hmm. Senator Kelly, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
All right, you too. We are just days away from Easter this upcoming Sunday. And yes, I do want to remind folks that there's also the Orthodox Easter, which is being celebrated a week from Sunday. Their Palm Sunday is coming up this Sunday, so we'll talk about that more next week. But for many, they are celebrating Easter on Sunday. So I thought, what better time to have Pastor Josh Fay on from Black Rock Church. And I know Pastor Fay, obviously, very closely because I attend Black Rock. But Pastor Josh, I have a very close connection to, specifically because he, like my parents, was very brave and had five children. So I've always been very connected to this man. And he is here this morning. Good morning, Pastor Josh. Thanks for popping on the show. How are you?
Good morning. Good to be with you. It's a great day today.
Yeah, it really is. And happy Good Friday to you. Happy Easter.
Thank you.
Tell us, for you personally, why you find Easter to be so significant and so important.
Yeah, well, it's a really powerful day and weekend for all Christians because we get to celebrate that Jesus died and rose again. And for me personally, I really appreciate it. One of the things I like to do is even like put myself in the mindset of what Jesus's disciples were like. I actually sent an email out to my staff yesterday and thinking through this weekend from, so Jesus' disciples were his friends that were following him around. And this weekend we celebrate on Thursday is when they would have had what's known as the Last Supper. And they were just kind of had a meal together. And it would have been a really close time where they would have been really, you know, having a great time together. And Jesus said some things that would have confused them. He gave them bread and he said, hey, this is my body, which is why Christians now take communion or the Eucharist. And he said, this gave him a cup of wine, said, this is my blood. But they didn't really understand what that meant, but they were just having a nice meal together. That was Thursday. And then Friday, today, we celebrate when Jesus was arrested and killed. And that would just been an incredibly crazy day. I mean, it would have been really confusing for the disciples. They thought he was going to be probably a political leader.
Talk about a contrast. You're celebrating and then you're devastated. You're right. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. You go from Thursday when you're just having a fun time together to Friday when you're in complete despair. I mean, this person you've been following that you thought was going to be a major leader all of a sudden is dead. Mm. And then Saturday is a day that is often just thought of as a day of confusion because nothing really happened on Saturday. Then finally on Sunday, Jesus appears to Mary and the disciples run and find the tomb empty. And then they understand really that he rose from the dead. And so you go just on this crazy roller coaster throughout the weekend of this nice dinner, then utter despair and confusion, and then elation and joy when you find out that Jesus rose from the dead. So that's kind of, you know, even as churches, we try to kind of maybe walk people through that this weekend so they understand what happened and the emotions of everything that went on.
It's a little bit of a parallel, honestly, in today's world, Pastor Josh, because, you know, I think we live constantly in chaos. I think we are, we could be having something really great going on. I was just having this conversation with one of the moms in Chase's preschool class because she was celebrating her daughter is turning four. And she said, you know, it's hard because I'm posting these photos, but then I have a friend who's got family in Ukraine, and she's like, and I don't know how I should feel. And I said, it's so hard to know which way to feel, and we live in such contrasting times. I think it's very parallel, honestly. As you were talking, I'm like, wow, I just had this conversation with someone yesterday. It's true.
Yeah, we seem to be going through these emotions. Like for our church, we kind of try to pick a theme, maybe for Easter, and our theme this year is empty. And we pick that because I know a lot of us kind of look around and you feel this emptiness in maybe sometimes in our own lives. Mm. You look at the world and you're like, man, it seems empty. But then what gives us hope is that we do believe that God is with us. And even though you look around and things look a little confusing or uncertain or even dangerous, that you know that God is with you and can give you some of that hope and peace in your life, even if the circumstances around you don't kind of look like that. So that's, you know, yeah. So even though our kind of world can feel empty, the fact that there's an empty tomb does give us hope and joy as well.
It is an interesting concept. We're talking to Pastor Josh this morning of Black Rock Church because, you know, that's just it. When they found it empty, it actually represented the fact that, oh my gosh, he was able to get out of here. This is crazy. Like it was this realization of going from, oh my gosh, I have nothing because he's gone, to wait a minute, this represents the fact that I have everything because of what he did essentially over this weekend. And it is an amazing parallel to say, you know, when you feel empty. I'm also curious, kind of talking about this, Pastor Josh. I find, and you and I have talked a little bit about this, I find that generation to generation, believers are different. I think, you know, if I look at my grandparents, for example, they were devout Christians. They went to church every Sunday. They did their traditions, and I find from generation to generation, my parents, I think they always went to church. They did the best they could with raising all five of us. My siblings were pretty split. I'm very much devout, but my siblings are very split. I think they all believe, but some, you know, are active in their faith. Some are not. And then I find like we're raising our next generation, and it's very interesting how religion has kind of really, I feel like, has changed generation to generation. And I find that churches are more apt to say, like, hey, why don't you bring a friend to Easter service just to let them see what it's like? Could you talk a little bit about that and how to attract people to worship or even just to believing?
Yeah, I think every generation thinks the next generation is really kind of crazy and messing up. So ultimately,
that's so true.
oftentimes, as that generation matures, they sort of realize some things, and that's, you know, and sometimes often come back to the faith a little bit because they realize, oh, I want some of that foundation that I saw in my parents, that I saw in my grandparents. I want some of that. That peace, like they, you know, to be honest, our grandparents went through much tougher times than we're going through right now. It was just kind of an aside story. My son graduated high school a couple of years ago during the pandemic and wasn't sure he was going to have a graduation. And I talked to my grandmother, who's 95 years old. She's still alive. She's
God
95
bless
years
her.
Old.
Oh my goodness.
And she was very matter of fact. She's like, we didn't have a graduation. She's like, the guys, they went off to war and didn't even make it through the whole year. Mm. And then we just kind of the year ended and I went to work, you know, and she's
right.
Like, and the funny thing is she ended that by saying, and nobody complained.
Sure.
So, I mean, we've been through times where things were even worse than they were now. But to your point, I think people often did find hope in their faith. And I think, to your point, if we have someone or we know someone maybe that's feeling a little bit that emptiness, that needs some hope, And we understand that we can find that in our relationship with God. I do think it's a great thing to invite them. And that's just to invite them to experience maybe something that you've seen or that you've experienced. It's like, hey, for me, I'd say if someone goes to a good restaurant and they tell you about it, you're like, hey, great. Thanks for telling me about your restaurant. You know, and same thing if you have a faith that is really helping you, that helps you have that hope, and you share it with someone, it's the same thing. They're like, oh, wow, thanks so much. You know, it's not pushing anything on someone. It's just sharing something that's helped you.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. That's such a great parallel. I love that. And Pastor Josh is here from Black Rock Church, and I know dozens, if not hundreds, of churches across Connecticut are going to be doing very special services for Easter this weekend. But really quick, Pastor Josh, do you mind just letting people know the rundown for Black Rock? If they are interested in checking out Black Rock, I rave about it all the time on the show, obviously. You guys are having services tomorrow as well as on Easter. Could you just do a quick rundown?
Yeah, so for Easter, we add a Saturday night service at 5 o'clock. That's a great service. We also have some great things for kids. So, you know, you can bring your son and on that day as well for Saturday at 5 o'clock. And then Sunday, we have three services on Sunday morning, one at 8:30, one at 10 a.m., and one at 11:30. And yeah, if people want to know anything about our church, you can go to our website, blackrock.org, and find out that information. But my encouragement is for people to find some way to celebrate and find that hope and joy that God wants us to have this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. Pastor Josh, thanks for popping on this morning. I appreciate it. And I'll see you at church.
Great. Thanks so much, Melissa. Great to talk to you.
Thank you, Josh. Appreciate it.